Welcome to the Next Level Soul Podcast, where we ask the big questions about life. Why are we here? Is this all there is? What is my soul's mission? We attempt to answer those questions and more by bringing you raw and inspiring conversations with some of the most fascinating and thought-provoking guests on the planet today. I am your host, Alex Ferrari. I'm always looking to help the Next Level Soul audience take their soul to the next level. And I've been able to partner with Mind Valley to present you guys with a ton of free masterclasses between 60 and 90 minutes covering mind, body, soul, relationships, and conscious entrepreneurship. Some of these masterclasses are taught by spiritual masters, relationship experts, best-selling authors, legends in the personal growth and spirituality space, and so much more. So if you want to sign up for any of our free mind, body, and soul masterclasses, just head over to nextlevelsoul.com/free. I think that every single one of us has had some sort of trauma in their lives. And many times we deal with it, but most of the times we don't. We don't work it out and figure out what that trauma has done to us in our lives. I know what's happened to me, and it took me years to get through some of the trauma that happened to me early in my life. But today's guest is a trauma expert. We have on the show Yemi Penn. And Yemi and I had an amazing, really raw and open conversation about her remarkable journey through her trauma and mine as well. And I think it's going to be an eye-opening conversation for you. So let's dive in. I'd like to welcome the show, Yemi Penn. How are you doing, Yemi?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for having me, Alex.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. I am excited to talk to you. Not excited to talk to you about trauma, but I'm hoping that this conversation can help people listening deal with trauma, identify trauma. It took me many years to identify my own personal trauma. I had to write a book about it, and we could talk about that later, and the effects that I had on almost 20 years of my life, all of those kind of things. And I hope that going through your journey can help some people. So I wanted to ask you first and foremost, how did you start your spiritual journey, your journey dealing with this, identifying it and dealing with it?
There were breadcrumbs. Yeah, there you go. There were breadcrumbs, kind of like awakenings, awareness, but I wouldn't have known. So I would have been in my late teens. I was at university, and that was when I started to, you know, form relationships, especially sexual relationships with partners. But I found myself wanting to talk about a particular trauma that had happened to me, which now I go back and think it would have felt potentially bizarre to my partners, because it was just potentially the biggest romance killer. So when I go back, I think breadcrumbs, that was it. I was reaching, seeking out, but had no idea who it was I needed to speak to. The real kind of big thing of, okay, you need to do something about it, was when I relocated to Australia about 8 years ago, and I was going through a divorce, and I just thought, Yemi, you're broken. Like, I literally started to see myself as a broken individual, something I'd never felt before. And then someone just advised me, okay, go see a therapist. That wasn't necessarily spiritual, but that opened me up to a different paradigm. And from there, I was almost attending every personal development just to figure out who the hell I was and which layer was overpowering another layer. And that was the beginning of the journey.
And was it stuck in your subconscious, and it wasn't really conscious, because you had a memory obviously of the trauma. And if you don't mind, can you talk a little bit about the trauma that you're talking, that we're discussing, and then we can figure out what happened? Because I understand my traumas and completely subconscious, and I'm assuming it was like that for you as well.
It was. So my this, and like you we said earlier before we came on, everybody's experienced some level of trauma. You might not want to call it that. It's a distressing or disturbing event. But the one that I kind of figure has played a big role in how I show up in the world was is a memory I have of around 7, 8 years old, where my uncle, so this was a family member, abused his power, his sexual power to be precise, over me. And I've started to say that in a more palatable way, because it's hard. It brings you back. I mean, I'm conscious of trying to protect my own energy. And as I speak more about this, I'm able to soothe my body to say that I'm no longer 7-year-old Yemi. However, I still do mourn with her because of the loss. And there's a part of me that mourns with other young girls and boys that still go through that type of trauma. But for me, it was being overpowered. It was being taken advantage of. It was major sexual repression. And at some point, if we're open to, I just had my first sex therapy session last week, which was huge. But, I'm almost 40. And right, that's how long it's taken for me to even go and look under that rock. So that was the particular trauma that happened to me that really has been the catalyst for the work I'm doing now.
And on a subconscious level, I mean, you obviously have a memory of the trauma, but yet didn't the subconscious, because the mind is such a powerful thing. It is your best friend and your worst enemy all at the same time.
Right.
It is built to protect you. And so it's trying to avoid any pain for you. So it hid a lot of the trauma that you suffered, and not bringing it out to the light. So it was hidden behind you. And again, I'm using my own examples of it, because that's exactly what happened to me, until finally it gets to a breaking point in your life. You're like, so many things are happening to you, or like there's these patterns I keep seeing. These are breadcrumbs you're talking about. And you're like, wait a minute, there has to be something else. And then you go, oh, wait a minute, it was this thing. And then you go archaeologically back into your own life, like Indiana Jones, and you start figuring out, oh, here it is. And when you open up that cave, is that a pretty decent example of explanation?
Perfect. You know what, you took me on a movie, like my whole mind was with you, especially with the Indiana Jones. That is exactly it. And that can span over
decades.
Some people think that might happen in a couple of weeks. We are talking decades. So mine definitely was suppressed. It was in the subconscious, which is just below ground. But obviously there were some memories, I think, on my pre-conscious, which I've just found out is really just that bit where you know something happened and you've heard a few other people speak about it, and might be trauma, but you're not sure because you're alive, you're breathing, you don't have any broken bones. So you don't really put it into the conscious. But that the smack I had was when I found out that particular uncle was looking after another little girl in the family. And that was when everything went, like, literally, if you could hear cars crashing, that's what was happening in my mind and my heart. And the sad thing now is that still didn't create the response I had yearned for. And that was when I realized, okay, this is something we hide. This is why it's in my subconscious. Because when I came out wanting to speak about it, it literally was everybody just going on about their daily life and do, this happens. And it still happens today. And of course we put it in our subconscious, because like you said, I was trying to protect myself. How was I going to operate if this was going to be the thing on my mind? And now I'm just creating healthy ways to do that.
And there's, when you have a trauma, a deep trauma like that, depending on how devastating that trauma is, there's layers upon layers of protection. Like, again, if we go into a movie, you're talking about walls and guards and weapons, and it's layers upon layers of defenses that's what working with a therapist does. Yeah. Is you start to break through little by little. And it could take years till you finally, because some people repress these so badly that I didn't even have any idea about my, and I keep talking about it, and I'll give you a quick,
I want to know.
It's a really quick explanation. I've been in the film industry for many years. And when I was 26, I got caught up with a ex-gangster who wanted to make a movie of his life. And for a year of my life, I was stuck in this abusive relationship with this person who basically threatened my life on a daily basis. It was like going to work with Joe Pesci from Goodfellas. Like one day he's the most funniest and happiest, and my God, this is great, to a split second, I'm going to kill you. I'll hit you over the head with a shovel and dump you in the back. And being 26, young, fairly green about life, I was really not a very worldly person at that age. I had no defenses for it. So it wasn't a physical abuse, but the verbal and mental abuse that I took completely derailed my entire career for 17 years, where I was even afraid of even making a feature film, which was my goal in life. My dream was to make a movie. And every time I would get down close to it, I would sabotage myself subconsciously, or I would bring in the wrong people subconsciously, and nothing. And I kept saying, why am I not getting through this? Like, I have the talent, I have more talent than most, I have more experience than most. So I can objectively see that I can do this job. Why am I not doing it? And I found out only after I decided to write a book about it. Yeah. That's when that exploration happened. And I was just like, it all came rushing out of me. And I was, and again, for people listening, it wasn't 17 years that I was thinking about this. Like, oh God, this guy did it. I call my gangster Jimmy. So again, it's not like Jimmy is like, oh, what did he do? It defines my life. None of that. I barely thought about it after 2 or 3 years of a very deep depression I went into after that. But after I got back out of it, I barely ever thought about it, rarely ever thought about it. And even
but
then
it was still impacting you.
Oh, completely. No, it was basically, it had the hands on the steering wheel. So it was controlling me subconsciously on the way I moved, because this is the weird thing about it with me, was that on the conscious level, everything I did was about trying to make a movie, trying to follow that dream, trying to do everything. But the backseat driver was completely derailing me without me knowing it for almost two decades. So it was such a revelation when I finally realized what had happened. And I started writing this book. Someone said, you got to write this book. So I did. And as I started to go back into, like, I literally had notebooks full of notes of, because I said, one day I'll do something with this story. It's just too insane. And by the way, when I was with this gangster, I also was being flown out to Hollywood, and I met the biggest movie stars in the world. And I was, the most powerful people in Hollywood. I was at the Chateau Marmont and the Ivy and all these amazing places. And I'm in Hollywood, and I have a whole chapter how I met Batman, one of the actors who played Batman, and all this. So can you imagine the dichotomy that I had to deal with, which is my life is being threatened on a daily basis, and I'm being verbally abused and beaten down psychologically. And yet I'm so close to my dream that I'm literally a foot away from the person who can make my movie come true, which is
what contrasting worlds. That sounds like a split complete existence.
And imagine that for a year of that. So it wasn't just like a little event. It was a year of that. So that trauma that I went through, when I started writing the book and going back into the archives, the defenses started to break down. And things started, the light wanted to come out, and it started to boom, boom. And then all of a sudden I would realize that I would literally have to skip chapters of the book while I was writing it, because I knew where I had to go emotionally to do. I would cry while I wrote it. And after the book was done, the first draft, I'll never forget it, when I wrote the final words of the first draft, it was gone. It was gone. I just let go of it.
So completely. You just needed to get it out.
Apparently that's all I needed to do, because once I had let the story out, there was no going back. And then shortly thereafter, I made my first movie. Shortly thereafter, I did other things. And all these things started to open up for me, but that was my trauma. So hopefully people listening can understand, it was very traumatic to me. I'm a Latino man. So it's like, oh, be a man about it. Don't worry. He didn't do anything. It's like all this kind of stuff. So a lot of that cultural stuff was on top of me as well. So I didn't really
especially 20 years ago, you don't really think about verbal or mental abuse the same way.
It's having any impact.
It's just like, Alex, these
conversations are so important. And I truly believe that, you know, your listeners and hopefully my listeners or just all the listeners, they hear this, they can maybe understand the things that they don't realize is holding them back, because we have been told or not told that they can have deep, deep impact. But let me tell you the gold in what I heard in what you just said. It's the fact that the minute you let it out, and I know it's different for everybody, that acknowledgement, it opens so many other things for you. That is, I say it in my TED talk, and I know it's really hard when we're in stuff, but the minute we just find the piece of the thread and we try to go back and trace it, honestly, it cracks us open. And this is why one of my questions is, can trauma be transformative? But I think I'm getting ahead of myself, so I'm gonna just hold fire till we get further down and go back to you. But thank you for sharing that. I mean, that moves me to hope.
Yeah, and I hope people listening can really see that it was such a weird thing, because I was in the front, like it's kind of like in the front seat. Everything I did in my entire life was dedicated to try to make this dream come true. Anybody ever listening, trying to get a book written, trying to get a movie made, trying to get the job, whatever that dream is for you, everything, my entire existence was about making that dream come true. But yet the backseat driver, which is a much stronger driver than the front seat driver, completely derailed me and completely made me bring people in that weren't proper. I made mistakes that I shouldn't have been making. I started getting involved with people I shouldn't have been involved with again and again and again and again. And it was just like, until you, as you get older, you just go, what the hell is going on? Why can't I move forward, when there is an obvious aspect of like, I can do this, you know? Or, you know, if you have a, you know, relationship issues, you know, like something happened with you traumatically with a relationship and like all men are bad or all women are bad, and it's a subconscious thing, at a certain point, you're like, why do I keep picking the wrong person in my life?
Correct.
Why do I keep attracting that into my life? Why do I keep accepting that kind of behavior in my life? All of these things. And that was the thing that was so fascinating about me. Because if I would have told you, I went off and I became a bread maker, and I never really thought about making movies again. And then all of a sudden I'm like, what I really want to do. And then 20 years later, I come like, what I really wanted to do is make movies. And that's the really interesting part of my story, I think, is that my entire life was dedicated to this goal. And yet I was sabotaging myself subconsciously because of the traumatic event that happened. And only after I let it out through writing this book, it allowed me complete freedom of it. Now I talk about it as openly as you do about your trauma. It's the beast has been let out. He's not scary anymore to me. Before, he was a scary beast because he was behind that wall. And those walls.
Sometimes we've got to name it.
Mine's is Jimmy. Mine's Jimmy.
Yeah,
mine's Jimmy. I have his face in my head as I'm talking to you right now. But by the way, for me, and this is going a little bit deeper, I have no ill will towards him. I've forgiven him, because I cannot blame a scorpion for being a scorpion. I cannot blame a frog for being a frog. And he made me who I am today, better or worse. And a lot of the work that I do today, and the why I want to help people, is because I want them to avoid a lot of the pitfalls that I went through with him. So he had a position and a point and a purpose in my life. And that's how I personally deal with it. It's different for everybody, but I truly have no ill will towards him. I send him love. I wish him the best. I don't even know if he's alive anymore. He was pretty old when I was working with him, but he had a purpose. There was a purpose. And not all things that happen in your life have to be good in order to have purpose. Bad things that happen to you as well are there to make you grow, to challenge you, to do all these kind of things. And that's what I've found with him and my acceptance of this trauma.
Oh, Man, you see me writing? I'm writing on my notebook. Do you know how mad that is? It's 7 a.m. in Sydney and I'm writing on my notebook.
I appreciate it. But so with your experience, in traumas, there are different kinds of traumas. Can you talk a little bit about what those different types of traumas are?
So I started doing documentaries, which is why I'm so intrigued with your film history as well, because telling my story through that creative form was really important. And I figured that's how I'd reach people. So I've been working with a lot of psychologists.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
And non-traditional healers. But the way they've just put it is kind of complex and shock trauma. Like you can have lots of traumas in both of them. Mm-hmm. So complex trauma would potentially be what you went through, what I went through, people who are struggling with PTSD. And a shock trauma is something like a car accident, something that happens immediately. Now, it doesn't mean that that doesn't live on in you. It just means that the impact was there. And so therefore it might have a different magnitude resonance. However, as a lot of us who follow trauma, there's this body of science that says the body keeps the score. So for those of us who have complex trauma, it might be little building until this massive implosion. But those with shock trauma, the body just holds onto it. And probably every loud bang they hear, they absolutely go wild and nuts and freak out because of that shock incident. So that's the best way that they've described it, but there's so much in it. So much so I'm doing a PhD on this at the moment because it's, I just don't understand how this phenomenon of trauma and the healing of it is not embedded in our society the same way eating is embedded or going to the doctors for a broken leg. We need to do more.
So when you went through your exploration and discovered what your trauma was, how did you begin to heal from that? Are there any techniques or tips that people can take with them to start beginning the healing? Because it won't happen overnight. So how do you deal with it?
I think for me, it was acknowledgement. But even just speaking to you now, I realized that acknowledgement isn't just saying to yourself, okay, this happened. That is one part. And it does, without a shadow of a doubt, give an element of freedom. It was actually speaking to my loved ones and trying to explain what happened and how it impacted me then from memory and how it continues to impact me. That was the acknowledgement that I'm not a wuss for saying it out loud a couple of decades later, that I'm not incomplete because it happened. The acknowledgement went deeper. So that was the first part of healing. Now I needed to do it differently. Not everybody needs to write a book like we have. Not everybody needs to do a movie. Everybody is different. But then to be really honest, this is the second part. And I say this in my TED talk, really, it was the awakening. I just realized that I needed to like do a 360 turn on my blind spots. It couldn't just be the talking therapist I went to see. It couldn't just be the psychologist. Something was drawing me into different traditional methods of dealing. So I started to do things like Reiki, energetic healing. I became a crystal dreamer. And I'm an engineer and I know it probably sounds like I'm trying to make excuses, but I'm trying to explain how as an engineer, I use the other side of my brain. Right. It can be very analytical. So for me to explore something different suggested that I was really curious about so much untapped modalities for healing being out there. And definitely the crystal dreaming helped a lot because that took me back and gave me a bit more reasoning and understanding.
What is that? I've never heard of crystal dreaming.
Yeah, it's a gentleman who's in Australia. He founded it over 25 years ago. It's effectively using crystals, which obviously are taken from Mother Earth and have these amazing qualities and properties from all over the world. So we use specific crystals to kind of create a portal. And you just lay it on the floor like a mandala, and typically you lie down in it. And what it does is it opens your subconscious. Like you literally, your practitioner just asks you questions in a loving way, and you literally call in your guides, but you go deep into your subconscious and you start actually telling stories that you potentially didn't even know existed, or some that you do remember. Truly powerful. And it's not the practitioner is the vessel. You are the one owning it.
It just does so much damage.
So, but here's the thing, Alex, I think, and once again, and I'm really hoping, because I know we're having a conversation, I think these kind of dialogues is how we shift and we change the narrative around trauma. So I'm really hoping listeners are picking up. So what you just shared with me is something that's been in my mind, and I might not do it for a couple more years, is if that's the case, could we go and start doing a stock take on our kids? Because we know trauma happens to everybody. However, we're not going to be able to stop everything. Did our teachers know that by having a high class and a middle class and a low class would impact? But it does. Imagine if that was done slightly differently. Could you have been more of a badass much earlier in life? I don't know. Question mark. These are the things that I think about. But then I know we can't stop everything. So yeah, is it just part of life?
It is. Well, if you can't put, look, I think this generation that is being raised right now, we are trying to stop everything. And I think it's a disservice. I think it's a disservice to this generation of kids because the world ain't like that. The world isn't all about, you know, participation trophies. That's not the world. Yeah. That's not the world we live in. So I think there has to be a balance with not going all the way trying to protect them from everything. Because if you do that, then when the world comes and hits them, life is going to hit them. Can't stop it. Life is going to hit them. And when it does hit them, they're not going to be prepared. And, but it's so interesting too, on the way, even slight traumas, there was a moment where something happens on a playground when you're a kid and that rewires you.
Yes.
And you're, and you're rewired from that point on. And now it takes decades for you to kind of change the wiring. That's what Tony Robbins does so well. It's like scratching the disc because the record, the groove is in there. And the older you get, it's harder to reprogram, but it is subconscious programming.
So you know what? Yes, you're absolutely. And just as you mentioned the rewiring, I remember. Did you get the chance to watch my first documentary?
I saw bits and pieces of it. It was wonderful. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, but one of the therapists in that, she's just now taking part in my third documentary, and something she says is, "Wouldn't it be great if we taught our kids to self-regulate? Meaning, when something happens in the playground, they fall over, someone hits them, that they have this tool where they can stop and just check in with their body, because apparently." They say if you respond to a trauma within the first 6 hours, you can reduce the negative impact it has on you for the rest of your life. That's what we've got to start looking
at.
Isn't
that interesting?
How can we soothe? How can we soothe our body and just check in and say, how did that make me feel? And just figure out ways. That's where our focus should be.
So you discovered your truth. I discovered my truth. And when that truth comes out of what happened, when it's in the light, we can deal with it. But when it's in the darkness, we can't. It's a boogeyman. Is that right? Yeah. Is that your experience? Yeah.
It is, absolutely. I mean, I heard it best, once again, from a coach through Tony Robbins, is you can't say goodbye to someone you won't even say hello to. It's like, how can you? Like, that's the other thing. People wonder, why do we keep on having all these struggles? Because you won't even acknowledge. You will not even acknowledge something that is driving it. And sometimes you don't know, but you won't even look at it. Like, you just... boogeyman hiding,
because again we're trying to protect ourselves. Our minds are trying to protect ourselves, and it's just such a it's so weird. I've seen relatives who've had trauma since they were kids, and I've watched their entire lives. They just keep repeating the mistake again and again and again, and you just go, why do they not learn that lesson? What is it? Why? What's driving them to make these same mistakes again and again when they know they're mistakes, but yet they keep going back there? So what is that? And then again, I analyze my own life as well. Like, why did I keep doing this, or why do I keep doing that? And by no stretch of the imagination, I still have plenty of other little traumas within inside me that I'm still trying to figure out. We all do. Well, I don't think we'll ever all get rid of them, because there's micro ones, there's the paper cuts, and then there's the punches in the face.
Yeah.
Oh, I always tell people, don't worry about the punch in the face. It's the paper cuts that'll bleed
you
out.
For real. For real. And you won't even know you're bleeding. You're like, oh, I keep on feeling
why pain. Why do I feel fake? Because you got 400 paper cuts, but you're worried about the one stabbing. Like,
so true. So true. Wow.
So you come up with a concept that, do we choose the experience our trauma teaches us? Can you kind of dive into that a little bit?
I had to modify that one. So when I did my first documentary, I remember speaking to the producer and she said, typically when you do a documentary, you want to be answering a really pivotal question. And said, like, and it needs to be, and it just came to me, just like a download. So my primary question was, did I choose my trauma? Because I had started to hear this notion, it was positive psychology of, you know, was it something growth, transformative growth? Anyway, I can't remember exactly, post-traumatic growth, that was it. And so I started to think, if that is a thing, on some different realm, is there a possibility that I had a choice in my trauma? So I called my documentary, Did I Choose My Trauma? That got a couple of 100,000 views around the world, and a very small percentage, I thought there'll be more, were quite horrified. Why would you even ask such a question? Like, they were horrified by the question. The question was triggering in itself. And I always knew that I wasn't going to reach everybody, but that's why I very strategically made it about me. Did I choose it? I am feeling bold and have the audacity to ask such question and investigate, but I couldn't put that on other people. And that's when I then went to, well, do we choose the experience? Because some people assume that we go and we say, I want to be bullied and harassed and threatened by a gangster, or I want my uncle to completely take my sexual power. I don't believe we do. Someone might think different. I definitely don't believe we do. But do we choose the experience? Do we, on some level, whether in this life or another life, if people believe it, say, I want to learn how to use my voice, or I want to learn how to speak for people who are struggling in countries, or I want to learn how to feed people, and then they become a farmer, but you know, they might think, oh, they're not doing a worldly profession. Do we choose the experience? That's what we've got to start looking at. So every time I'm going through some really deep ish, my question is, what am I meant to be learning from this? Like, every business venture I've had in the past couple of years, there's always been conflict with the men in particular that I'm meant to be liaising with. And so I'm now asking myself, what is the experience here? What am I meant to be doing? And that's why I pose that question.
I think that people listening really need to think about something. Every great historical figure, whoever, from Mandela, Martin Luther King, you can Jesus, everybody, throw it all out there. Every one of them had a struggle. Every single one of them had an event, something that happened to them that made them who they are. I believe that we cannot be who we are meant to be without being tested. And it's just, I'm not even getting into the spiritual here. If you want to go down the spiritual road, I could absolutely go into karma and all that kind of stuff. But if you look at it just as a pragmatic, using the engineering side of the mind, every great historical figure who accomplished great things, every single one of them had obstacles, had things that they had to overcome, and they were challenged. Some of them were traumatic events, like Steve Jobs was adopted.
Yeah.
He was abandoned by his parents. That defined his life. If he would have been born into a loving family, would we have Apple today? Would he have had that drive that you need? Would Nelson Mandela have been able to do what he did? I don't want him to be in prison for as long as he was, but do you know what I mean? You know, does Buddha have his experiences, you know, to become enlightened if he doesn't go through the multiple different ways he was trying to find enlightenment that were all wrong for him? Mm-hmm. And he had to go through these experiences. So I believe that we're here to be tested. The metal cannot get hardened unless it's being banged against the stone. And I think this comes with age. As you get older, you start looking back at your life and you're going, wow, that thing that was really the worst thing that could have ever happened to me truly kind of was what I needed at that time. I needed to almost go bankrupt to understand the value of money. I needed to have a breakup, or I needed to be in that really bad relationship, so when the right relationship showed up, I could recognize it.
Yeah.
These kind of things. What's your opinion on this?
No, absolutely. I mean, as you were speaking, I was like really leaning in saying yes, yes. And then I had my other voice saying, yeah, but I really don't want to have to go through hard times. And I think that's part of the narrative we have to get comfortable with. You know, everyone is saying get comfortable with being uncomfortable. I completely agree. And I remember my daughter saying to me, because I had her go to the UK for 6 months. I went to boarding school in Nigeria. And I tell people, when I say boarding school, they think, oh, Prince Charles, Prince Harry type boarding school. No, ma'am.
Harry Potter. Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Hogwarts? Not Hogwarts?
No. Think Survivor with no camera crew. And you're lucky if you get rice and beans. That's what I'm talking. So I went there. And I remember telling my daughter that really taught me independence. I didn't like it at the time. And she said to me, yeah, but mom, not everybody needs to go through major trauma in order to evolve. And so I sat with that for a little bit. And so I said, okay, maybe you don't need to go to Nigeria. How about you go to the UK for a bit? Your dad's there, go be with family. And so for 6 months, we just created a new contract. She has come back a completely different, profound human being. The change in environment, something. So even though some people might feel, well, why do I need to go through that? Sometimes you need the shift. And if you don't make the shift, like life. You said, with that punch, life will give you the shift. So you kind of got to make a choice. That's my view. Make a choice.
You don't learn from winning. You learn from losing. I mean, that's just life. If you are winning all the time and have nothing but success, you have no understanding or you're not really growing. Because you need to have that hit to go, okay, you need that Rocky moment. If Rocky would have gotten to the ring and knocked out Apollo Creed in the first punch, what kind of movie is this? Like, why would we be watching? He needed to struggle. That's why I love that movie so much, because that's why it still resonates. It's a 70s movie that resonates to this day. You can watch it and just go, got it. Because he Sylvester Stallone tapped into something that was so primordial in us, that is the underdog story. But look at the struggle, but then get the shot at the ring at the championship, where you should never even have had a shot at the championship, but yet you were still able to get it. But he needed to struggle. Struggle is what makes us stronger. And if you even look at our bodies, the way our muscles grow is by tearing them apart.
Absolutely.
It's nature.
So what have we missed? Alex, why is this not common knowledge?
Because we don't want pain. Because we don't want pain. Because our entire mind is built around avoiding pain and gaining pleasure. That is, and it's also ego-based. So look, most people just want to sit back and relax, and they think that if they had $1 billion, life would be good. I know a lot of people who have a lot of money and have a lot of success. It's not what it's all cracked up to be. I know some people who have a lot of money and success who are absolutely wonderful and they're doing great work and all that stuff, but they have a different drive of what drives them. But that's the thing, is that we don't want to struggle. Who wants to struggle? Like, I don't want to. I want to wake up tomorrow morning and look like Brad Pitt and never, and I want to eat whatever I want to eat all day, every day, and have a six pack and look like Brad Pitt all day. That's what we all want to do. You know, it could be whatever, pick your movie star, you know. But even Brad Pitt doesn't do that, by the way. Brad Pitt still has to work to keep Brad Pitt looking like Brad Pitt looks, you know. All of us do. But we all want the easy route. But as you get older, you start realizing that when doors are always opening for you, which rarely happens, but when it does happen, you don't grow as much as when the doors have been, obstacles are being thrown in front of you, because you need to get stronger to go through it. And to go back to what the conversation starts off as, is trauma. Trauma is probably the biggest obstacles that can be thrown in front of you. They are the biggest life challenges. These are the things that define you or define your mission in life, and not in a negative way, but it definitely tilts you in a direction. Like we've discussed, your direction, my direction. Without our traumas, we're not who we are. And I don't want people to have to go through traumas, but if life is brought that to you, it is what it is. And you have to do the best you can with what you're given in life. And some people are born in the royal family, and that's a whole other kind of trauma, but some people are born rich and with success and they have success around them at all ways, and doors are open for them, and they have their life set for them. And others are born in the ghetto, abandoned in a dumpster somewhere, and they struggle and fight to get out of where they're at. And both are experiences in this life, right? Both. You can't blame Prince Harry for being, or Prince Charles for being born. He was born. That's his path. And the one who, and he's, I promise you, he's dealt with trauma, but not trauma that you and I have dealt with, because we don't know that world, but we have different kinds of trauma and dealing with it. I spoke to, I was speaking to a Navy SEAL the other day.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
And I asked him, what does it take to be a Navy SEAL? What is that thing, that thing that you see that all people who make it through that program, which is the most difficult mental and physical endurance in human in the world, is to be a Navy SEAL. And he's like, well, first off, the big muscle bound guys who were the quarterback in high school, they're the first to go because they've never had any adversity. Everything's always been given to them. So they were so good at what they did, they thought they could just coast through this. They're gone within a couple of days. Then you've got the ego built out guys who are all tatted up and big muscle bound guys who think they're, it's all ego. And they're like, I'm the toughest of the tough. They're gone a few days later. I go, well, so who lives, who stays? He goes, it's the scrawny guys. The guys who have been fighting and clawing and grinding their entire life. Those are the guys who make it through. Those are the guys that have what it takes to get through mentally and physically. And I was like, wow, isn't that amazing? So the one who's had the most trauma, the most obstacles, are the strongest and can survive that kind of endurance, that kind of trial, as opposed to the quarterback who's good looking, has gotten everything all his life, and doors have swung open for him. They have no defense. They have no weapons. They have no tools to deal with adversity in life. So you see what I'm talking about?
Yeah, no, I do. And I guess when I start thinking of how, for the listeners, for me, I boil it down to two choices, and you can always have more. Do you choose to transform your trauma, or do you choose to transfer it? Yes. We're not suggesting anything that happened to you is good. Just make the choice. You can sit in it and say, this happened to me, this is it. Just break it down, transform it or transfer it. And we do transfer it either generationally or to our loved ones. Mm-hmm. So when you find yourself hitting out at people, you are transferring it. When you find yourself being that mean partner because you were treated poorly, that's transferring it. You can transform it in so many ways. That's the choice.
Yeah. And my God, that's so powerful. You're absolutely right. Because you do, you know, that trauma gets passed on generationally.
Yeah.
It does get passed on. If you're not careful, you can pass on that anger or that abuse or that thing to your kids or to your partner when they come into your life, or to your business partners or to friendships, or every relationship in your world can be transformed by those things if you're not careful and really identify it. I heard a great saying the other day, which is the boiling water that softens the potato also hardens the egg. So it's the same boiling water.
Oh, so good. So good.
As I heard that, I was just like, you know what? I'm going to use that all the time because it's such a powerful and profound statement. Because if we want to use the example of boiling water as trauma, you could either let it soften you to the point where you can't deal with anything else, or you can let it harden you and you can get stronger from it. But it's the same water.
Yeah.
That's the powerful part about it. It's just like, oof.
I mean, can you see just how changing, like just a sentence with some truths, some facts can really get you thinking differently? And that's what I love about transformation work. That's what's completely changed my mind. That this introvert, this shy girl who felt her voice was taken away, could actually speak on stages and do the work and start, you know, because I started opening businesses the minute I started to acknowledge my trauma. Like, that's what I'm trying to say. And it's not just about the business or the money, because there have been failures in that as well. But it's actually just the freedom to do, like, honestly, it's the ultimate freedom. And it's the ultimate dance with fear that acknowledging my trauma has allowed me to do. My goodness, I want everyone to have that, everybody.
And the transformation of your trauma into something positive into your life, because like we said earlier, it's not your choice,
yeah,
per se. It is not your choice to have the trauma on you. It's not your choice to get into a car accident. It's not choice to get abused. It's not choice to be, you know, abused by a gangster for a year while chasing your dream. All of these are not choices per se. But what you do with those traumas is, we have no control of our life, quote unquote. All we can do is control how we react to life.
Yeah, I absolutely, I think, and you know, when you go to bed thinking about something, you end up dreaming about it as well. Like, it literally seeps into your psyche and probably comes through your core, whether you want to call it law of attraction. And I know sometimes we've given things words that have, you know, kind of woo-woo-fied it. But honestly, people need to lean in. And it's another reason why I don't fight as angry or as dirty as I used to, because I thought that was the only way you could get ahead. Because the energy it took to do that was way destructive, took away from time with my kids. And I'm like, no, like, I don't even, now my answer is just no. If I'm having a disagreement, even with a business partner, it's just no, this is why. Like, I don't even have to go into all of it, because it draws a lot. So I'm very intentional on what I put out. Sometimes it's hard, but very intentional, because I know what I put out is going to come back to me. And I am tired.
I'm exhausted again, slapped around by life. Life keeps slapping me around. The sledgehammer keeps showing up.
So I just give everybody love, more love, take love genuinely, because it's what I want back.
Now, there is a part of your story that's really intriguing. That you were at one point homeless and then you got from homeless to this point. Can you talk to me about how you got to the point of being homeless? What brought you down to that point in your life? And then how did you overcome that to get to where you are today?
Oh, definitely been gradual. The more I tell the story, the less of a big deal it feels, in a weird way. Mm-hmm. So the homelessness part was, I decided to do things differently, fell in love, tall, dark, handsome guy in the UK. And we just, you know, because we were, what, 24? We thought we knew everything. 40, still no, nada. But really thought we knew everything, because that's what love would do. And our parents wanted us to get married, because we were going against the grain. We're going against the memo, as I call it. And it basically got to the point that my parents said, well, if you think you can do this, then you're going to need to hop on out. Because I just graduated from university and things weren't going too well with my then partner, to the point that I literally had nowhere to go, because parents had said move out. He didn't have a place. He was with his parents. And here I was, I think about 6 months pregnant, needing to go and literally register with the government. And I didn't even know what government help or housing was. Like, for me, I'd never had it. I'd got myself a job from the age of 12. It was a big deal. And I remember that first night waiting at the door somewhere close to midnight, because I wanted to be the first person in line so that I could be housed. And I was housed, and it was a halfway house where, you know, people who are in between homes and, you know, trying to get over drugs. And I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready for that. And that was a moment where, once again, a very different level of consciousness, nowhere near where I am today, was, okay, Yemi, this doesn't feel right. What do you need to do? And I think mentally, I just thought, okay, I need to be on my, not grind, but I need to save me. No one's coming to save me. I need to save me. And that was when, subconsciously, I started applying for the roles. I started showing up at work more as a boss woman, more confident. And that then over time allowed me to start doing some ridiculous things, like living in Japan for a little while and then going back to London, then coming to Australia. And then within a year, setting up my first company, it went a bit, but I needed to hit rock bottom because that's contrast, right? But like, how do you know what you want?
Let's dissect that for a second for everyone listening. You needed to go to that place in order to know that you don't belong there. If at that moment someone would have showed up, a guy on a white horse rode in and said, "Hey, come move with me into my mansion and it's all going to be fine." And you wouldn't have learned that lesson. You wouldn't have had that drive. So again, that is a pain that you needed to go through in order to project you out into the path that you needed to go. But without that, you don't go down the path. And you start, and it's as you, like you said, as we gotten older, we look back and you can't see this at 24. You haven't lived long enough yet. Correct. Generally speaking.
Yeah.
But when you're getting into your 40s, 50s, and you start looking back, you start seeing patterns. You're like, "Oh, thank God I didn't have that happen to me. I really wanted that to happen. Thank God it didn't happen. Oh man, that thing was like the worst there. I felt so bad. I was devastated, but that moved me here. Oh, I got fired from that job. I thought it was the end of the world, but 3 days later, I got this other job. And then that projected me into opening up my own business." And these kind of things that when you're in it, it's so hard to see. But in retrospect, you go, "Oh, okay." So I hope that people listening can kind of understand that in their own journey, that if something, and I do truly, and I know this is hard for people to understand, but I truly believe that when something bad is happening to you, in the long run, it is for your best. And I know that's hard for people to swallow, especially when you're going through a difficult time, because I've had devastating breakups in my life, let's say, that were traumatic, like sitting down 6 months and not going outside because I was destroyed. I was devastated by a traumatic experience. 2 years of being in a depression after Jimmy, you know. So I get, like, if I would have told me then, like, "Hey man, this is all going to work out fine for you," I would have punched me in the face, because you can't see it. You can't see it at the moment.
And let's say that for those who are in it, and we never know how bad it is.
Correct.
You might want to punch Alex in the face. Yeah. And we get that, but just hold tight, because even though it might not make sense now, the minute in whether a week, 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years, remember this conversation and come back to it, because this is what will get you out of that hole a lot quicker than you think.
But I do appreciate you saying that, because I said, I know when you're in the middle of the pain, you don't want to hear anything from anybody. And we have no idea how, if you're listening to this, what kind of pain or what kind of trauma you're going through right now. But understand that from both two different perspectives, yours and mine, as difficult and as painful and as horrific as some of the traumas are, in time, you will be able to look back on it and understand what was going on. I forgot this wonderful author who was in the genocide in Africa, in the Wakanda genocide. She was stuck in, she wrote a book, she toured with Wayne Dyer. I forgot her name, but she was basically, her family was killed, just completely murdered. And she had to hide in a bathroom for 3 or 4 months every day, living within fear of dying, of her being found by murderers. I mean, it was just the genocide. It was a genocide.
And how
she had to deal with that trauma, and how she was able to come out of that and to finally forgive and to finally love. But she's like, "How could I love someone who killed my entire family? How could I forgive this trauma? How can I, you know, all of this stuff?" And that story, and I'll see if I can find it. I find that story and I'll put it in the show notes. But there's trauma, different levels of trauma for everybody.
Yes, so, absolutely.
But it takes time. It takes time. Now, where can, I'm going to ask you two questions I ask all of my guests. What is your mission in this life?
It's to raise the vibration on acknowledging and healing our trauma. It hasn't changed. It hasn't changed, because I truly believe that we talk about sustainability of the planet, and it's like everybody's forgotten the sustainability of humanity. Unless you want robots literally toiling the ground and doing all the things, we need to just take just a few steps back and sustain humanity. And to do that, we need to look at our trauma and heal it as we go along.
And why are we all here?
To remember who we are, which comes from love. That's why.
And where can people watch your movies, read your book, find out more about what you do?
So my website is best, yemipen.com, which is Y-E-M-I-P-E-N-N. You can watch the documentaries there and order my book. But also Instagram. Follow me on Instagram and you get the realest, realest version of Yemi for sure.
Yemi, thank you so much. This has been an absolutely wonderful conversation. I absolutely love talking to you. And I hope that our conversation is going to help some people listening out there. So thank you for the work you do. I really, truly appreciate you.
Thank you for having me.
I cannot thank Yemi enough for coming on the show and sharing her journey into trauma and how she has dealt with it and has turned it into power to help her move forward in this life. Now, if you want to get links to anything we spoke about in this episode, including how to watch some of Yemi's amazing documentaries and work with her, head over to the show notes at nextlevelsoul.com/057. And if you've only been listening to this over podcast and you want to watch these amazing conversations, please subscribe to our YouTube channel at nextlevelsoul.com/YouTube. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, trust the journey. It is here to teach you. I'll talk to you soon.